So he started to tell a story. We were in the kitchen, and then he, so I listened to the story, and then he started to tell a second story. And I said, "Hold on a minute, let me just look at the computer." And so I did, and at first he was kind of self-conscious, and he talked in third person about me to the people listening to the thing. And I said, "No, don't do that. Just talk to me like you're talking to me."
Sure.
And then he got the drift of it, and he did one, and it was a big hit. They loved him, you know, my listeners or readers or whatever. So anyway, so you're Jerry Vass, VASS.
VASS.
Do you have a weblog yet, Jerry?
No, I don't.
You don't.
I don't have a weblog. I have a website, vass.com.
Okay.
But it's, you know, that's strictly commercial.
So what do you think? Well, of course. What do you think about the idea of having a weblog?
Well, I'm just coming to it this morning. I mean, the reason I drove down here to talk to you is because I had converted a book that I had on CD to MP3 files with the idea that of having people who are interested in the book download it into their iTunes. I'm a Mac weenie, so into their iTunes, and they could then load it onto their iPod,
right,
and actually turn the iPod into an educational device, not just rock and roll.
Yeah.
And so that was the whole point of it. And I'm now beginning to, well, I've had this book in the works for at least 7 years. And somehow this book, I have the parts and pieces of it, but it never wanted to come together. And the fact of the matter is, I am not a book writer, even though I have a book on the market and have had for 10 years. Soft Selling in a Hard World. What I really am is a short story writer. I write short pieces, and to me that is, my view is anybody can write about anything in 30,000 words, but it's hard to compress, and I use the word compress in the software sense, where you actually squeeze the dead space out of the thought or the concept or the story or the idea.
Right.
And I'm pretty good at that, at squeezing that stuff out. So I'm really a short piece writer. And so I'm seriously considering, rather than finishing this book and sending it off to the publisher, which quite frankly is more and more in my mind an antiquated way of thinking, and you can trust me on this, the publishing business is the most backward business in the world today. There's nothing more backward. I mean, the publishing business is comparable to streetcars. And they have built in some really interesting traps in the publishing business. For instance, if I submitted a manuscript today, and let's say that the manuscript was ready to go to press, but this book, Soft Selling in a Hard World, actually, my daughter and we wrote it. We edited it. I mean, I hired a copy editor to edit it. Then we laid it out on PageMaker. We sent it to them on a PageMaker file. They put it on, and they ran the book without change. So they didn't do any of the mechanical except for the covers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was pretty forward-looking for its time. I mean, it really was. Nowadays,
in what way was it? What were you saying?
Well, because it wasn't being done.
The author doing all the production.
Author doing all the production.
So, how long did it take them to go from what you gave them to actual?
To actually go to the street with it.
Yeah,
it took about 18 months.
See, that's ridiculous.
Well, of course, it's ridiculous.
While it's sitting on the shelf there, it's going out of date.
It's even worse than that. Even worse than that. This little book, and this sounds a bit braggadocio, but it isn't. It's just a fact. This little book would sell out instantly. I mean, they would buy a bookstore, would buy six copies, it'd immediately go away.
Mm-hmm.
Then it would go to a computer someplace, and then it would be ordered by a computer. It would take 3 weeks for that book to come back in. So the book would be on the shelf for 3 days, and it would take 3 weeks to replace it, but that's the publishing business.
So when you're thinking about writing another book, basically it would go through exactly that system all over again.
If I had
hasn't really changed
if I had it done today, It would not be on the market, wouldn't be in the bookstores for a year.
But it's still kind of nice to go over to Barnes & Noble and just pick up a book.
Right? Absolutely.
I like that.
I prowl around over there all the time.
I'm going to Elmore Leonard's books now, and basically there's like, they've got 30 of them over there at Barnes & Noble, and so anytime I want to get another fix, I finish one book, I just can go over there and pick one up. And it's kind of trashy, but it's fun.
Yeah.
But, you know, the distribution system still is kind of relevant, but why does it take 18 months?
Of course.
Well, because they've got their own weird customs
traditions.
And stuff like that.
It's tradition. And
maybe unions are involved somehow or something like that. Or
I think it is so hard to make money in publishing. I think they have to have a lot of stuff going. And the author is simply part of an assembly line. Mm-hmm. It's just an assembly line. And out of our discussions, I am seriously considering scrapping that whole idea.
Right. Well, if you're short story,
and going to a blog, because I'm 70 years old, you know, I mean, I'm so
really?
Old.
You're
I can't,
70 years old.
Yeah, I'm so old.
You
I can't.
Looks,
I can't.
Look 70 years
thank
old.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's all right.
What's the line? I'm so old, I can't buy ripe bananas. Green bananas. I can't buy green bananas.
No, you're not that old.
But anyway, what I wanted to do is the ideas that I'm working on and that I do work on because of the nature of my business as an executive level sales trainer is that there is a currency in persuasion and the way persuasion changes over time. People think, well, it's all about this one way. It isn't, because the market changes, everything has to change with it. And so we are in touch with those changes just because this is what we do for a living and we're at the contact patch between business and the street.
What's a contact patch?
Well, because we talk to the people who are talking to the people on the street. You're talking to the clients all the time.
Who is? You are talking.
They are talking. Our students are talking to those people.
Okay,
and then we talk to our students and we probe very carefully in the course of our 3-day course. And we get information from them, and we take the information home, and we think about it, and we go, you know what? Market is moving. The market is moving here. And so we try to move with that market. And so over time, we've discovered a whole bunch of stuff that is totally counterintuitive and very controversial. It's going to be very controversial because people... businesses and industries really have gone against the marketplace. For instance, let's say you have a firm out here, Acme Corp, and Acme Corp bills whatever. Acme Corp, say, is a consulting firm. Well, they know everything about what they do. They're very smart, and we're a culture of extraordinarily smart and bright people. But the way they have been enculturated by going to school and by becoming educated and by the culture, by TV and all the media that surrounds them, when you ask them what they do for a living as a potential buyer of their services, they can go to great lengths to tell you everything they know and how smart they are and their credentials, but they cannot translate it into the language for the buyer. They can't translate it into their customer's language or to a language that works in the boardroom. And I mean, that's what we do, is help them translate all of this education and all of this experience and all this marvelous talent into a message over here that a CEO will understand. And you have to understand that CEOs are extraordinarily smart, but they don't have any time. So you don't have time to explain how wonderful you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is one of the things that we run into, and it sounds like hyperbole, but it is universal. It is now a universal problem in our culture that businesses cannot explain what they do from the buyer's point of view. And so this book is about that. It's about
the new book.
The new book. Right. The new book is about that premise, about translating what you do mm-hmm. into the buyer's language. And tentatively titled I don't know if it's tentatively titled. I have about 50 titles, and I haven't really settled on one. But it is about decoding this thing, about this this communication gap. So anyway, I'm thinking about it, and with our discussion this morning, I'm going, well, hell, maybe I have been waiting for this kind of a breakthrough in thought, and maybe blogging is the way to do that.
Well, let me just add something, because I'm listening here. You talk about the stuff is that there aren't any blogs that I'm aware of that are in this area. There are lots of technology blogs. There are lots of lawyer blogs, lots of political blogs. Business Week has started one. Okay.
Really?
Yeah. Uh-huh. But it's not like this. It sort of like covers everything that Business Week covers, which includes the kind of stuff you're talking about. But it's not this kind of focus. It's not how to market. And there is a guy named Steve Rubell, who is a PR guy, who has a leading edge blog. You know, it's how to do public relations in, you know, this context. And things are, you know, I just did a podcast with him in New York a couple of days ago, and it was fascinating stuff. I mean, it's funny because when, you know, it's in all of a sudden public relations, you know, which had drifted from being public relations to being press relations.
Uh-huh.
Right. Well, now it goes back to being public relations because right. you're, you know, that big word disintermediate.
Yeah.
You know, right. It's everywhere that you look here. And, you know, and I think that where your stuff ends up is that you're not just going to be talking to people who sell to buyers, but you're going to be talking to buyers on how to get what they want out of the seller.
That's right.
Right? Because there are a lot of times when you know that you need a product. I find this happens to me a lot, where I know I need a product, and I strongly believe that a lot of other people would like to have that product, yet nobody's making it. And then 5-10 years from them, then of course somebody is making it, and it's one of the biggest hits you've ever seen. And it's not that it was technologically impossible to do this, you know, 5-10 years before. It's just that it hadn't. The channel of communication was a one-way thing,
yes.
And the manufacturers or product designers weren't themselves users, so it never got to them that there was a way to, there was a product that needed to be done. You know, something like the iPod, for example, you know, an incredibly convenient form factor, right? I mean, but something in a slightly less convenient form factor would have been possible 10 years,
nah, sure.
5 years ago for sure. But somebody had to overcome all of the inertia that comes from thinking, well, things have always been done this way, and you won't, you know, you'll hit the objections of the music industry, and, you know, it took a very creative approach to things to say, well, we'll, you know, we'll try to work something out with the music industry at the time when it becomes a problem, and then, of course, it worked out real well. The music industry, I read a thing in the Times, New York Times today, saying that the new president of Sony wants an iTunes for movies, because it works so well, you know. And I personally think that iTunes could work even better if it weren't for so much of the paranoia on the part of the music industry. And you know, it's unfortunate that it takes time for that to sort of work its way through the system, but it will. And so, like, when you say that you write in small sort of story-sized chunks, me too. And early on in my writing career, I guess you could call it, I got a book agent, a couple of them actually, wanted to do me to do a book. You know, they said, well, we can certainly sell a book for you. You know, and so I went and looked, and I had already written like 3 books worth of material, basically.
Uh-huh.
And so I went back and printed it all out. Just, you know, and they were in essay form, not blogs. I mean, these were...
I understand.
Yeah, right. And I printed it all out and put it in a binder. And, like, I never got around to reading it, you know, because why? Because I was writing this stuff for today, you know, and this stuff, when I finally did read some of it, I thought, well, you know, it's kind of interesting in a sort of time capsule way, but this stuff's out of date, way out of date. The things that I was predicting, you know, I'd have to put asterisks everywhere to say, well, this turned out to be true, and this didn't turn out, you know, and so I said, forget it, I can't do it. So he said, but really, we could sell a book, and I said, well, yeah. You can sell a book, but I don't have it. So we hired an editor to go try to do this. And the editor, and we hired another, and they all struck out. They couldn't do it. You know, so there is writing that absolutely doesn't fit the model. I'm convinced that's what I do. that you could not make a book out of what I write. And I couldn't, and in converse, I couldn't change my writing style to be a book writer. Why? Because I would insist on publishing what I write every day. And when I do that, when you do that, when you approach writing that way, it changes the way you write. You tend to write in the context of the moment. Right. And maybe somebody wouldn't understand, like today I said, you know, the coverage of the Pope, well, yesterday I said, the coverage of the Pope's death is ridiculous. We're getting an infomercial for the Catholic Church, you know, and where's the balance to this? Why aren't they, you know, why don't we get an education about the Catholic Church right now instead of just this PR, huge PR onslaught on the Catholic Church? You know, today that comment resonates with some people, and of course other people, they hate me for saying it. that's fine. And I also said today, you know, let's stop, you know, talking about our friends, let's make some new enemies. You know, it's like, it's no fun if you're just stoking your friends. You know, it's better to actually piss some people off, right? Then you kind of know that you're actually accomplishing something. But, you know, if you looked at that, if a random person looked at that a year from now, you go, what the fuck is he talking about? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they wouldn't have, even if they were alive and listening and aware at that moment, they would have forgotten it a long time.
Sure.
You know, yeah. There'll be a new pope, he'll be different in some way, and, you know, John Paul will be dead, and he'll still be dead, and, you know, and we will have moved on. So it's, you know, on the other hand, you build these relationships with people who then become readers of your blog, and then something really interesting happens, okay? After a while of doing that, what happens is they start their own blogs, okay? Because there's this thing that I call the Pied Piper effect, is that inevitably, when you stand up and do this blogging thing, you will, if you do it well and you do it consistently, you will attract people who then, at first aren't like that comfortable with the idea of doing it themselves, and watching you do it, then one day they get an idea. And they say, what am I going to do with this idea? And say, I'll put up a blog. And there they go. Now they're up and running. And so, you know, it's I think, a great place to be. You know, when you realize that there's something, and we're just going to go through this in all the different sort of human endeavors, and each one of them is going to have a Pied Piper, a guy who gets the thing, a bootstrapper, the person who sort of seeds the idea out there, and given what you do and how you've done it, I think, you know, you'd be a great guy. I'm sure Britt Blazer would agree too, that you'd be a great guy. I just saw Britt, by the way.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I had lunch with him like 3 days ago, and it was great, you know, just brainstorming one idea after another, rapid fire, and I think you'd be great at it. I think that everything you're doing, I mean, okay, you said before that you get $6 sales for every book that you write, every book that you sell, right? There's $6 or $8 worth of follow-on business, but right. You only made $1 on that book to begin with. So I think that's a big clue right there.
Yeah, it is. But see, I've never figured out a way to, we have obviously capitalized on the additional sale part of that.
How do you, what are the $6 to $8? What are those sales?
Training, consulting.
So you get some, you know, they read the book and then they come to take one of your seminars?
Yes. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And it continually generates a little business along. We sell them out. I mean, the book business is really a strange deal because if a book sells 25,000, it's considered to be a bestseller. I mean, far and away a bestseller. Well, this book has sold 65,000 bucks. Nobody's ever heard of it. I'm 65,000 copies, but nobody's ever heard of the book except for those 65,000 people.
Why is that?
Well, because it's never been promoted. It's not stocked in the bookstores much. You have to kind of run the book down. It's all word of mouth. And and still it produces, and still it does everything it's supposed to do.
So what would you like? Would you like it to be well known? Would you like to sell more copies?
Well, for strange reasons, yeah, I would, but for strange reasons, because this little book is a selling manual for salespeople. I mean, it's like a Boy Scout manual. There isn't any controversy in it. It's just like, this is how you do it, and it's laid out mechanically, because that's the way I think I'm mechanic. And it would help a hell of a lot of people make something of themselves.
Cool.
Because most salespeople are really bad. they're really bad at what they do. They've read a bunch of crappy books, which is teaching them tricks and manipulation and all that.
And people know they're being tricked and manipulated.
Of course.
And that's why people are so circumspective.
It's like, watch my hands.
I know. It's like, when you actually meet a salesperson who actually likes their product and wants you to be happy with it, you can tell. But
that's the magic.
It's fun to work with those people.
Yeah, is wanting you to be happy with the deal. The salespeople that I have known who are really good, A, they liked what they were doing.
Yeah.
And B, they liked the long-term relationships that they built with their clients. And it wasn't all about money. It was about communicating and being straight and helping people do the rest of the stuff. Solving their problems.
Life isn't about money.
No, it really isn't. It really isn't. And so I've been doing it for 27 years, and it's been very satisfying because we put a lot of people on the road, and people go, well, selling is the sort of downer. I mean, if you can't do anything else. The fact of the matter is, people who sell well, they don't work as hard as everybody else. They make a lot more money. They live in the big houses, and they drive the fast cars, and they get their kids educated, and their kids' teeth look good, and, you know, so it's
and as you say in the book, everybody sells.
Everybody.
There's no such thing as a profession that doesn't involve a lot of selling.
Not in this country. Yeah. This is not a country where people come and seek you out because you're a really smart accountant.
That's right. No, it doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work that way. So,
there's a lot of myths around that.
And, yes, indeed.
And of course it's not about, the sale. I'm not a bad salesman. I closed a multi-million-dollar deal selling a house in Woodside. A friend of mine who is a very accomplished salesperson. I mean, he's made lots and lots of money. A friend of mine, and he pointed out at that point that I was a multi-million-dollar sales guy now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I said, wow, that's really weird. How the hell did that happen? And I watched myself do it, and, I've learned how to sell things, I've establishing a standard, for example, is totally sales. It's technology, sure, but the technology and to know what choices to make, because there are a lot of choices, is based on experience but even so, even the most powerful standard has mistakes in it. The things that you can learn later. It would have worked better if you had done it another way, But even so, there's no way to change it. You still use it, and it's fine. It works. So there is technology to it, but it's 99.99%, politics. And politics, of course, is salesmanship, right?
That's right.
It's how to get the guy to do what you want them to do at the same time to feel that they're doing what they want to do. That there's a mutual, that it's good for everybody. And it's about a human being. We're a social species, and making yourself feel good and making other people feel good, they're related somehow.
That's
kind of who we are. It'd be great to have a blog. I know a few people right off the bat who would like it. Like the guy I was telling you about before, Robert Scoble, who's at Microsoft. He used to be, before he got into technology, he was a camera store salesman. And he talks about it a lot. And he found it easy to compete with the other guys because they were sort of rushing the customer through, and he didn't look at it that way. He loved cameras, and he is a naturally ultra gregarious person. He just he loves. It sounds corny, but he loves people. You can see that, and he doesn't have a whole lot of tolerance for people who won't put the time in. Not every minute has to be billed, and they had very loyal customers, and they paid more, to get the cameras from him because they enjoyed working with him.
Sure.
I think having more like marketing and sales energy in the blogosphere would be a very good thing because and maybe we'll be better at marketing and sales. Right?
I look at what I do as teaching communication
probably more than sales. Sales is, puts kind of a stigma on it because it, selling has rather poor, stinky kind of reputation in our culture. But actually, selling well is really nothing but communicating well. And so it's these communication skills that are the nut of what we do. We call it sales training because nobody's going to pay us to teach them how to be, how to hold a conversation.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Right?
But that's what you're doing anyway.
But that's what we're really doing. We're doing, I tell people, I said, what we teach is civilized conversation.
Well, maybe we ought to turn the recording device. It still feels like we're doing a show instead of just having a conversation. So let's just wind this down and then continue the conversation. Just could you say what your email address is if you want?
Yeah, Jerry at Bass.com.
How do you spell Bass?
VASS.
Right, so that's how people can get in touch with you if they want to. I don't doubt that there will be people who will want to, and I'm going to help you get your blog up anyway.
This morning, this Sunday morning, out here on the beach, I think that's the way I'm going to go.
Jerry's beach blog for the sales guy.
Well, you know, I used to write. I've been writing for.
Do you want me to turn this off? Or,
no.
Oh, okay, we'll leave it on then.
I don't care.
You want some coffee?
Yes, I have some coffee.
What are you taking? I don't have sugar. I just
have milk.
I have half and half. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. That's very good. I've been writing for years and years, and I used to write. Short stories, short pieces, all of that stuff. Years ago, that used to run in the Joyride Times. I never could figure out what to do with that stuff. I have 70 or 80 pieces out of those days. Telluride in the 70s. And maybe I'll just talk to them and run that out a lot.
Podcast. Yeah, get the microphone and put it into your back.
Well, that's a good idea. You know, I've been seriously considering putting this stuff into audio for my kids, actually. For prosperity, for my children.
That's good. It sounds a little warmer, but it's reality.
You know, if your daddy is like me, he knows he's going to die. You go, okay, I want to die one of these days.
Oh, me too.
Well, but you know, it becomes more real after a certain point. You go, you know what? This may be the last day for me.
Yeah, well, the Pope just died at 84,
yeah.
Right? And, I'm going to turn 50. What's today's date? 3rd? On May 2nd.
I tell you what, you know what they say, the longer you live, the longer you're probably going to live.
Well, that's true. Come on, that's
obvious. Well, it's statistically.
Yeah. Well, if you make it through 50, then you know that you
have cheated death a bunch.
Well, no, if you make it to 50, you know you made it through your 40.
That's right.
One of my heroes, Douglas Adams, died when he was 49. He's a great science fiction writer. And at the time, I was 46, I think. And that really spooked me because, here's a guy who's contemporary and, you know, he looked good. He didn't look like he was about to die. But then, there he goes.
Well, when you're my age, my buddies are dying or sick. They got prostate cancer.
Do you have anything? You're doing good.
Yeah, I'm doing good. I'm blessed. Well, let me tell you. My good buddies, they got cancer. Just getting operated on. It's a horrible thing to watch, you know. I mean, I love these people, and these people are all sick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It gets very real. You read the newspaper. What was this actor who just died out of the New York actor? Jerry Orbach.
Oh, right. Prostate cancer. Yeah.
He's my age, 69 years old. Gets real close. People say, he's born in 1935. You go, I was born in 1935.
Yeah.
It gets dicey when you get at this age. But I'm fortunate. I have great genes, and all my family lives get real old.
That's good. Yeah. Well, Clint Eastwood was at the Academy Awards. I thought it was pretty interesting. Yeah, he's getting on in years. And
is he 72 or something like that?
No, I think he's quite a bit old. I think he's 76, 77.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, he's older than 72.
God, he looks good, though.
He does, but it's beginning to sort of, like, his age is showing in the million-dollar baby. He doesn't try to look younger. He just basically, you know, which I think is great. And his mother was at the Academy Awards, though. 94 years old, and she looked great. She had this sort of bright look to her face, like somebody who was not, like, you know, I mean, if he wins another one 10 years from now, he's probably, she'll probably be there, too. She looked very, very good. And he made a joke about it. He said, you know, my mom was, the last time I got the Best Director Award, she was only 84 then. and then the camera goes in on her, and she's just beaming, you know. It's a pretty nice story, of course. It's not that common, though, that guys that make it into their, you know, 70s can have their mothers be there with them when they get there.
Let me ask you this. On this podcasting thing, how do you do distribution on that?
Well, if I had a net connection here today, I could show you the whole thing, because we're going to do one, right? What you do is you upload it to your website, to your blog.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you just put it up there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, it goes up as an MP3 file.
That's it. There's nothing more to it. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Well, that's basically what this idea is. I just hadn't extended it over to...
How big is this file? Is this one file or more than one?
No, it's 307...
Megabytes? Is it one file?
One file.
Whoa!
Well, okay. No. Well, no, it's one file, but it is 23 tracks.
Well, still, how many files? It's just one file.
One file.
So that's, okay, so since we're doing a podcast right now, we should explain that you took your book, right? This is Soft Selling in a Hard World. You recorded it onto CDs.
A couple years ago,
so it became an audiobook.
That's
and
right.
Then you just rip those CDs to turn them into an MP3.
On iTunes.
You use iTunes to do that? Oh, I didn't know iTunes could do that.
Neither did I.
Okay. Oh, that's good.
It took me about an hour to rip it off.
Right. Well, I do that all the time. I buy books and, you know, then rip them so that I can put them on my... I mean, I get them... Some of them I get through Audible, and they have all this digital rights management crap on them, and it makes them really sort of a pain in the ass to use. And sometimes I just buy them, you know, in this form and then rip them. But that's also a total pain in the ass because it turns me into a disc shuffler, which I hate.
Sure.
We may want to break this up into more than, I mean, one 300 megabyte thing, it's like, it's hard to download that. How could somebody just try it out if they wanted to sort of like listen to a couple of chapters?
I just did this ass backwards then because... What I did is I had this broken into four files.
Right, and you merged them together because you had four files for each of the CDs, right? One file for each CD, right? No?
More or less, yes. Yeah. More or less. Uh-huh.
So take them apart again, and we'll upload them. Do you have a net connection to your house?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
sure.
Well, as soon as I'll have one here tomorrow.
And I got AirPort, I got Ethernet, any way you want.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think your airport reaches the south, does it?
No, it
doesn't. That would be kind of nice if it did. Maybe we could string a wire.
Yeah, string a wire and a couple of cans.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. No, tomorrow I'll have the cable companies coming tomorrow. And I'll set you up with a blog, and I'll give you space to put your MP3s up. And you know, I'm going to put this up probably tonight, this podcast that we do right now. I'll upload it because, might as well let people hear it.
Sure.
This is going to make it a really interesting AV because my guess is you will be a blogger, you will succeed at it, and you will become a podcaster, and it's going to be like a whole new career for you. And that this podcast that we're doing today is going to serve, we'll look back on this one, have a good laugh. We didn't know anything.
Because the fact of the matter, I am extraordinarily naive about this stuff, but I am I'm fascinated by the idea. I'm fascinated by the idea, the concept of it.
Yeah.
I'm going to do this. I'm going to try this. And the reason I'm going to try it is, quite frankly, I have a whole bunch of material Not all of it is good. Some of it is very good, and a lot of it is kind of ordinary, but I have a lot of material that I've been trying to figure out a way to promulgate it, but I didn't want to go to print with it. I just don't have any desire to go to.
Well, why put up with that turnaround?
Right? Yeah, you know, I mean, none of us are going to be here forever.
Especially when you're not going to be here forever.
Why would you want to be here?
18 months might be our life.
That's right. You have to remember, all just penciled in. It's free birds.
Yeah. I never heard that one, but it makes perfect sense to me. You know? The whole thing is a penciled in thing.
Well, yeah.
Even when you're young, it feels like you're going to live forever.
That's right.
Yeah.
Everything's on low. So.
Hey, but, Jerry, we're doing pretty good. I'm looking out the window right here. You know, looking at the blue sky and the beach and whatever. So for this moment, it's pretty amazing life.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm gonna race off and
is that
whatever you want to get.
Well, is that phone number you gave me? Who you called me on? Is that like your main number?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll just put that into my address book and should I set up a blog for you then?
That'd be cool. That really would be.
Do you already own the domain? Jerry, www.vast.com?
Yeah, vast.com.
Wait, let me turn this off, because now we're going to talk about stuff I don't want to broadcast. Okay. So thanks, everyone. This is Morning Coffee Notes. Dave Weiner, April 3rd, 2005, with Jerry Vast. Your email address again for the folks at home?
Is jerry@vast.com.
Cool. Okay, so if you want to tell Jerry what you think, send him an email.
And it doesn't have to all be good. They can tell me what they
don't. Don't worry, you don't need to tell them that. They already know that one.
They got that one.
Yeah, I think so. Thanks, everybody. See you soon.